Hello, and welcome to McLean's on the Hill. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio. The federal party leaders have squared off in the McLean's leaders debate. The political bout was filled with jabs and feisty exchanges. We'll take a look at some of the highlights of the debate and speak with the moderator, McLean's political editor Paul Wells, to get a behind-the-scenes look at the showdown. Now, it's not just what a leader says that's important in a debate, but also how they look and act. We speak with a body language expert to get his take on the leader's performances. Now, there's no doubt social media is playing a big role in this campaign, but we're also hearing some interesting stats about Canadians' online habits from the time of the McLean's debate. We speak with Facebook and Google about social media trends. And finally, our McLean's panel will weigh in on what's next for the leaders and what they need to do to improve in the weeks ahead. For your politics, for your power, welcome to The Hill. The dust is now settling after the McLean's leaders debate, but on Thursday night, the country saw an exciting event when the four major national party leaders squared off for the first time. They didn't disappoint either, with feisty exchanges and jabs flying left, right, and center. The first issue up was the economy, with NDP leader Thomas Mulcair targeting Conservative leader Stephen Harper over the negative growth that shows Canada is on the brink of a technical recession.
Stephen Harper is the only Prime Minister in Canadian history who, when asked about the recession during his mandate, gets to say, "Which one?"
Harper held his own as he deflected the attacks by repeating highlights of his economic record and warning Canadians against the fiscal plans of the other parties. But the jabs just kept coming, with the next topic being energy and the environment. Green Party leader Elizabeth May took aim.
Under John Baird as Environment Minister, you committed to oil and gas regs, which we would see by 2010. And you also personally went to Copenhagen. It wasn't a previous promise from Jean Chrétien. You were in Copenhagen and committed to what was, I hate to say, a very weak target, but we are not going to come anywhere near it by 2020. And there's just no credibility at this point. Canada needs to take action.
But the dynamic changed a bit for the second half, especially on the topic of Quebec separation, when it became a battle over what referendum result would be needed for Quebec independence. Now, NDP leader Thomas Mulcair says 50% plus one, and he criticized Liberal Justin Trudeau for not being clear on what he thinks the threshold should be.
What is your number, Mr. Trudeau?
First of all, Mr. Mulcair, I don't question your patriotism.
You haven't answered.
The question is, why
number,
is your policy
Justin?
So reckless? You want a number, Mr.
Yeah,
Mulcair?
I'll give you a number.
Nine. My number is nine. Nine Supreme Court justices said one vote is not enough to break up this country. And yet that is Mr. Mulcair's position. He wants to be prime minister of this country, and he's choosing to side with the separatist movement in Quebec and not with the Supreme Court of Canada.
Harper faced more attacks over the Senate scandal, but the tough exchange this time came from moderator Paul Wells.
The courts in the provinces didn't name the senators who are in trouble. You did. Do you owe Canadians an apology for putting Mike Duffy, Pamela Wallin, and Patrick Brazeau in the Senate?
Well, first of all, I certainly did not name all of the senators that are in trouble. The Senate has been an institution that has these kinds of problems for 150 years. I'd say for the first time, we actually have a Senate that now has clear rules and is enforcing those rules. What I will say is this, Paul. My role is not to apologize for the bad actions of others.
But the Conservative leader got better as the debate rolled along, and Harper finished strong defending Canada's mission against ISIS.
This organization has become the global nerve center of a violent jihadist movement that is not only threatening, literally slaughtering hundreds of thousands of people in Iraq and Syria before we intervened, but is a threat to the entire region and a threat to the entire globe. It has singled out Canada and Canadians by name and has demonstrated the ability to carry out attacks in countries like ours. It would be absolutely foolish for us not to go after this group before they come after us.
Now, after the debate, many pundits said there was no clear winner, although every party was claiming victory. But there's no one better to weigh in on all of this than the man with the front row seat. I was able to catch up with the moderator, McLean's political editor, Paul Wells, the next morning. He tells us what he thought of the bout and gives us a look behind the scenes.
We had this very exciting debate. The leaders really went after each other. You were the only person really in the room with them as they duked it out. What were your impressions?
I was really happy. The leaders were actually surprisingly willing to let one another talk. I was prepared to cut in quite a bit more than I did and be like a referee and pull them apart if they were just stomping all over each other. But a lot of what we got done was sort of negotiation through eye contact and body language among the leaders who weren't talking while someone else was. I would point to Tom Mulcair while Trudeau was talking, and Mulcair would know that, and Harper would know that Mulcair was next. And they played by those rules pretty well. We had a substantive discussion. I think we covered a lot of the really big issues that people are concerned about. There were some that we didn't cover. I think it was a useful debate at this point in the campaign, early on, when people still aren't really sure what the issues are.
You were an active moderator. In the past, in federal election debates, we haven't really seen that kind of engagement where you stop people in their answers and fact-check them, call them out. How do you think that really changed the dynamic of this debate?
Well, it was a lot more like the way I talk to these people when I'm interviewing them individually. And I have interviewed all of them several times before. A long time ago in the Prime Minister's case, but... when you're talking to someone, when you're just having a conversation with someone, you challenge them, you test their assertions, you remind them of something that you were hoping we could talk about that they haven't talked about. And I just decided to bring a bit of that spirit to the debate. Now, the stakes were high. I had to always remind myself that I couldn't interrupt them while they were saying something useful so that I could say something useless for the sake of hearing my voice. And so I held myself back a bit, but in the end, yes, I was more of an interventionist moderator than we're used to seeing in some of these debates.
Was there anything that was happening during the debate when they were going after each other? Little things that maybe the camera didn't pick up that you really noticed, the energy in the room, maybe from certain leaders. What did you notice there?
I was struck by how nervous they were when they came in. They sort of scoped out the room, stood in various positions, made sure they understood their camera positions. I'm told that Justin Trudeau's staff was not pleased at how far away he was from the camera he would be addressing. But that's luck of the draw. We drew laws to determine where people would be standing, and I don't think Trudeau suffered at all from that geometry. But he pays people to worry about these things more than he does. It was interesting in the breaks. Each of them had a staffer, or each of them had one person who could come in and speak to them during the breaks. With Trudeau, it was his chief advisor, Gerald Butts. With Mulcair, it was senior NDP official from British Columbia. With Elizabeth May, it was her daughter, who's been at her side through all of her campaigns as a national leader. And for Stephen Harper, it was his son, Ben, who's a student at Queen's University.
That's a really interesting choice.
Yeah, and it reminds me that when you're in that pressure cooker, there's two things you can look for at the break. You can look for, yet another layer of strategic advice, or you can look for a calming presence. And Harper is clearly very close to his son, who we rarely see in public. And he just thought that sort of chatting with Ben would even him out between the segments of the debate, and so that's what they did.
And I guess for an experienced debater like Harper, he knows what he's doing well, he knows what he has to work on already. He doesn't need to have those advisors in there.
Yeah, if you were to go back and look at the video of the debate very closely, you would see that my exchanges with Harper were actually much more interactive, much more back and forth with Harper. I think that's because he was comfortable with anything I could throw at him, and he didn't feel the need to get his point out. So some of the other leaders were very reluctant to be interrupted. But Harper didn't care, because you're perfectly free to disagree with his stance on just about any issue. But he knows what he thinks about any issue, and so he was able to handle any question. Not for the first time, I was left wondering why he is usually so reluctant to be interviewed.
Now, you're talking about how Harper really tried to calm himself down and change his demeanor, or at least be able to make sure he stayed relaxed in such a pressure cooker environment. Mm-hmm. What about the other leaders? Thomas Mulcair seemed rather different at the start of the debate towards the end of the debate. He seemed to be much more relaxed, much more into the zone, if you will, than he was at the beginning.
Now, I was strapped into my moderator's desk, so I couldn't hear the details of this. But at the other end of the studio where they were, I think they had some concern with which camera he should be looking into. And I think that that was resolved partway through the debate. So I think it might have been a simple thing that some technical aspect of his performance had him off balance. Also with Mulcair, there's just this eternal arbitrage he has to make between the side of him that wants to be reassuring and pleasant and chatty, and the side of him that wants to win any argument he ever gets into decisively. And I think he tends to mood swing between those two extremes.
Now, you asked a lot of tough questions. You put those leaders on the spot many times. When you were crafting those questions, I mean, what really went into that? And did you scrap any questions because you think they may have gone too far? Were there things that you thought, maybe this is straddling the line, but we're going to go with it anyway?
We had a week of rehearsals during which I consulted closely with colleagues from Maclean's who stood in for the leaders about what they thought of the various questions I was asking. I had one question for Elizabeth May that was intentionally very light and very open because I didn't want the whole night to be a pressure cooker. And my colleague said, you got to pull that. You got to give her a hard one, too, because you've given hard questions to all the others. So, no, we didn't throw out any questions because they were too mean. We threw out one or two because they were too easy.
So after you've had some time to think about this, You were there in the room, you saw the way they performed, which may be a little bit different than what Canadians saw on screen, but nonetheless, it seems like there's a consensus at this point that there's not really a clear winner out of this debate because everybody performed well. What's your take on who came out on top, if any of them?
Honestly, I have a hard time judging that thing as a political event because I was so busy just making sure the planes landed on time. It seemed to me, I would have been surprised if there had been a decisive loser out of this debate. It's just too early. It's like when question period starts up after MPs have been away for a while. The first day of question period is never decisive because it takes a few days for the issue that's going to be one that they can coalesce around, for that issue to identify itself. This had the feeling of something we haven't seen in recent campaigns, which was, I think this is what an early debate is like. Identifying issues, identifying stances, and a little bit less of the desperation that you get when a debate is 5 days before people vote. I was comfortable with that. I thought it was a nice change of pace to have something that was a little lower key.
Going into this, a lot of people said this debate may set the tone for the rest of the campaign. Do you believe it did?
I think it did insofar as if anyone doubted that all of these leaders have serious business with all of the other leaders. What we saw is that Trudeau has a bone to pick with Tom Mulcair on conditions of secession. Elizabeth May has a bone to pick with Tom Mulcair on the Kinder Morgan pipeline. Stephen Harper has a bone to pick with all of them on resource development. Even though it was, I thought, quite a respectful debate, even amid all the confrontations, I think it set the table for a very acrimonious campaign still to come.
What homework do you think each of the leaders has? Where do they need to improve on after this debate? And what do they have to do in the weeks and months ahead?
I think Mulcair hasn't yet established himself as a durable front runner, partly because the other leaders declined to treat him as the front runner last night. I think his position... He's been leading in the polls for a while, but I think it's still kind of precarious. I think Trudeau reassured his supporters. I don't know how many skeptics skeptic minds he changed with his performance, but reassuring your supporters is a good place to start. And the Prime Minister still, Stephen Harper wins when he extends conservative appeal beyond the conservative base. And I think he might have begun to do that work last night, but he's still got some way to go.
Elizabeth May?
She won by being there. She always presents her side forcefully and will probably not get a lot of other opportunities at these national debates. So she at least reminded people that the Green Party is an option.
That was Paul Wells, the moderator for the McLean's Leaders Debate and the political editor for McLean's Magazine. Now, McLean's has also released a special tablet issue with complete coverage and analysis of the debate. If you want to check it out or watch the debate in full, you can go to mcleans.ca. Still to come on the show, we examine the body language of the leaders, we look at the social media trends and find out which leader was Google searched the most, and the McLean's panel weighs in on what's next for the campaign. Welcome back to McLean's on the Hill. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio. Coming up on the show, we check in with Google and Facebook to look at the social media trends from the debate, and the McLean's panel weighs in on what the leaders need to do in the weeks and months ahead in the campaign. But first, when you watched the McLean's Leaders Debate, you may have noticed the party leaders were trying desperately to get their message out to voters so that they could sway their support. But sometimes it's not always what the leader says that's important, it's how they appear when they say it. As leaders went through the preparation process with their inner circles, there is no doubt that there was a huge focus on body language. So how did each leader perform with their mannerisms and facial expressions during the McLean's Leaders Debate? To find out, I speak with body language expert Mark Bowden.
What were your first impressions of this debate? What did you notice out of the body language of the leaders?
Yeah, so first impressions were who looks most prime ministerial, who looks calm and assertive. Because if you're a swing vote, if you don't know who you're going to vote for, my guess is you're going to want to go for somebody who's kind of looking like that prime minister. Of course, Stephen Harper is a past master at this. He's had more opportunity than anybody else of looking like and behaving like a calm, assertive prime minister. He fits that bill pretty well.
What about the other leaders? Let's look at Thomas Mulcair with the NDP. He's leading the polls right now. He's never been in a debate before of this scale. How did he perform?
So he's quirky. I mean, he's kind of interesting because there's a lot of shifts in his body, a lot of facial movements that say to me sometimes an air of negativity, of cynicism, especially when talking about Harper's policies. Now, that might go well for some people, but if somebody is looking, again, for calm, assertive prime minister, I'm not sure he's the person. Sometimes he has a facial expression that can look kind of bitter, almost. Again, for somebody who's looking for somebody being bitter about Harper's politics, he's the right guy. But if you're looking for somebody maybe to play on a big world stage, I'm not sure he does behave in that classic prime ministerial way.
All right, let's move down the ladder here to Justin Trudeau. What did you notice about the Liberal leader?
So Justin Trudeau has some very good symmetrical body language. That's calm and assertive. But he tends to talk at about the rate I'm talking to you now, which is about 140 words a minute. And this is a little bit too fast for most people, really, to get an idea of what he's talking about. And many people will check out of that. When you go back to Harper and Mulcair, they're slower. They're talking at about this rate here. It's easier to understand. So some good pluses for Trudeau in that his body language is on the whole symmetrical, but he does talk fast.
Could nerves have played a part in that?
Well, of course, because actually if you go to the end of the debate where he gets to do his 2 minutes, he slows right down and he starts doing quite a narrative kind of book tour biography voice to get his policies across. So I think when rehearsed, he's calmer. In that situation, which is high pressure stuff, no doubt, he speeds right up. But again, is that somebody that maybe the swing voter is looking for as a prime minister? Does that mean he can take the pressure?
Elizabeth May?
Yeah, so Elizabeth May, you know, very interesting in terms of the visual image there, because there's a lot of confusing stuff that happens. And again, this is really about the way she's dressed more than anything, but it's hard to get past that. What you'd got was this, a lot of icons on her body, essentially. You've got what looked to me like a crucifix at her chest area, two badges to the side, one a Canadian leaf, and I think the other was maybe an Order of Canada. And then your eyes go up to the earrings and then to the glasses and the hair slightly across one eye. It's very difficult to focus when there's so much happening on the mouth and the eyes, which is we lip read more than we ever think we do when we're watching somebody talk. And so it's hard to focus on the eyes and the mouth when there's so much happening around the rest of the body. So in my view, she could do with being more consistent and clear in the way that she dresses in order to that we can tune into her language even better.
Now, I noticed watching the debate that conservative leader Stephen Harper, while others were talking, in the last debate, he usually just did not look at others. He sort of stared at the camera and ignored the rest of the leaders. This time, he was leaning on his podium every time they were speaking and sort of glaring at them almost. What was behind that? What effect did it have? Was it throwing off the other leaders? What's your take on this?
Well, I think the effect is this, and I think it's because of the way this debate is set up. It's actually set up a little bit more like an actual debate, whereby people get to argue. There's a bit more of a to and fro. I think the last time we saw Harper in a debate, it was really everybody gets their go to talk. Well, why would you look at anybody else? When it's your go, look straight down the camera and make it a party political broadcast. In this case, there was real, I think, argument going on. I think what he's actually trying to show is that he's a listener. Now, that might be true or false, okay? But essentially, for anybody who might be swinging in their vote or never voted before, to see somebody who can talk in a calm, assertive manner and then relax and listen, that might show good leadership for some people. That might get him a vote.
Did any other leader do anything aside from just their regular mannerisms that caught your eye in any way that made you think, wow, that's something a little bit different? Or why were you confused by anything that they had done?
Well, again, I think the starkest thing for me was that difference between Trudeau during the to and fro and of the debate and then the rehearsed piece at the end. And I think it unfortunately came across as very, very rehearsed.
That was body language expert Mark Bowden breaking down the mannerisms, expressions, and appearance of the leaders during the McLean's leaders debate. Still to come, we speak with Google and Facebook to take a look at social media trends during the debate, and the McLean's panel weighs in on what's next for the party leaders. Welcome back to McLean's on the Hill. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio. Still to come on the show, the McLean's panel weighs in on what's next for leaders after their first political bout. But first, social media has played a big role in federal politics for the last few years, and this election is no different. So McLean's teamed up with Google and Facebook to track social media trends throughout the McLean's leaders debate. Google had some interesting results as it tracked Canadians' online searches. Aaron Brindle is a trends expert with Google and lets us know what they found when the face-off began.
There was a tremendous amount of search interest and activity around the debate. In particular, we saw a tremendous amount of interest in the leaders themselves. And in that category, we saw search interest in Justin Trudeau eclipse the other leaders by a significant margin, outpacing searches for Stephen Harper by 54%, doubling what we saw in searches for Thomas Mulcair and Elizabeth May. So a lot of interest and curiosity across the country in Justin Trudeau in last night's debate. And in fact, if you look at a map of Canada and you color it with the party colors associated with these leaders, it's red from east to west, with a few small exceptions where PEI, Alberta, and the Yukon search more frequently for Stephen Harper, and in the Northwest Territories in Nunavut, Elizabeth May. So tremendous amount of interest here in Justin Trudeau as Canadians went online to learn a bit more, get a bit more context around what we were talking about during the debate.
So you can't really fully tell if they were good searches or bad searches. Would that be correct?
Yeah. So what's interesting, though, is that the searches had substance. There was a real engagement in what the leaders were talking about. So no, it's I don't think you can pull direct intention around how people are going to vote on October 19th. It's certainly not a a poll by any means. However, what you can look at is what are the kind of questions Canadians were asking with regards to the leaders. And as I was suggesting, they really dug in on substance, especially around the economy, which was the first issue that was up in the debate. And some examples, we were talking about Justin Trudeau. One of the top questions for Justin Trudeau is, who does Justin Trudeau consider to be middle class? It's a great question, considering that the middle class is such a central plank of his economic platform. For Stephen Harper, one of the top questions was, did Canada have a surplus before Harper? Certainly that was a point that some of his opponents last night hammered home. Another question for clarification that Canadians were asking in the context of that first part of the debate was, is Canada in a recession? The questions and engagement around issues on the economy and energy and the environment were definitely kind of like the two big areas of focus when it came to search activity online.
So which one of those was the most searched question?
Well, it was, it was, did Canada have a surplus before Harper? That was the top search question, followed by, is Canada in a recession? And what's interesting here, and I think this is really revealing, one of the top questions for Thomas Mulcair was, who is Thomas Mulcair? And, you know, we were talking about that map earlier. That is reflected in some of the national data, where clearly there was not a lot of search interest around Thomas Mulcair. And one kind of interesting kind of data point here is that when you look at searches between Thomas Mulcair and NDP, searches for NDP far outpace searches for Thomas Mulcair in Canada. But the reverse is true for the Liberal Party and Trudeau and the Conservative Party and Stephen Harper. So awareness around Thomas Mulcair is probably not as high online. Maybe that's going to change over the course of the campaign.
Now, of course, Google was not the only one to track trends. Shortly after the debate, I spoke with Kevin Chan from Facebook.
Why did Facebook decide to team up with Rogers for this first debate of the election campaign?
Well, sure. So as the election's heating up, Canadians are really going to Facebook to follow the leaders, the campaigns, and the issues that they care about the most. And we have 20 million Canadians on Facebook, and as you can imagine, that makes for a lot of political conversations. And so what we're doing here, what we did today for the leaders' debate, is look at all the interesting data that we can get from the conversations of 20 million Canadians talking about this across the country, and seeing how are they reflected in the data in terms of the issues and in terms of the conversations about the leaders themselves.
Yeah, I mean, all of those conversations across the country, it's kind of amazing that you're able to pull that all together in one night in real time as it's all happening.
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty proud of that. This is one of those very powerful insights that we can bring. It's real time, but also we can do this riding by riding. So you can look at a given province, all the ridings within a particular province, how are these issues and how are these leaders ranking in terms of the numbers of conversations across the country. And these, I should add, you know, they're happening spontaneously. So this is not people necessarily reacting to a post that a leader has made or a party has put out there. These are actually people commenting on things on their own with their family and with their friends. And we're able to get all this in an aggregated, anonymous way, but then still show you the degree of conversation that's happening on Facebook.
So can you tell whether the conversation's good or bad?
So we are not looking at that today. We are just looking at the number and the volume of conversations. And so that could be things that are positive towards a leader, but it could also be critical things as well.
All right, so I guess the big question is, who are people talking about?
So we looked at this sort of pre-debate and then also during the debate. So before the debate, we saw that Stephen Harper, for the last 2 months, has been dominating that conversation on Facebook. So 70% of the conversations were about Mr. Harper. And, of course, that's potentially because people really like him. It could be because people are very critical of him, but it also is probably because he's the incumbent prime minister. So obviously any comments or any announcements that the government is making, he's going to own those in many respects. And so it's not surprising to see that. And then we look at during the debate, we saw once again Mr. Harper was the one who ranked number one in terms of the conversation. Now what is interesting is Mr. Trudeau was number two, pre-debate and during the debate, but number three actually changed in terms of the ranking. So going into the debate, Mr. Mulcair was number three. He had 19% of the share of conversations. But during the debate, we saw Elizabeth May really come up there and really stand out and move from fourth place to third place. So dislodging Mr. Mulcair going down to fourth.
Of course, in a debate, they're debating the issues, and you were able to track the conversations happening about the issues themselves, and what were you able to find?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, if we look at pre-debate, the last 2 months, not surprisingly perhaps, the economy was the top issue. So I think close to 50% of the conversations on Facebook were about the economy. Number two was governance. So things like the Senate, things like our voting system or electoral system. And again, interestingly enough, a lot of people will say, Canadians don't care about process. And actually, the Facebook conversations in the last 2 months suggest that they really do when you think about the election. Now, during the debate, what's interesting is the economy stayed on top, so clearly remains a top-of-mind issue during the debate. But something that actually didn't spike previously, so pre-debate, energy and the environment as an issue came in number six, so very low down the ranking. And clearly, the conversation and debate during the election moved it up. So it actually dislodged governance as the number two issue. So we have jobs and economy as being very important to Canadians, but now we see that the debate seems to have affected the types of conversations, seeing issues of energy and the environment spike and go up to number two.
So I imagine that this debate is not just a one-off for Facebook. You guys will be tracking social trends throughout the election?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think you'll see that the farther we go down the election, we'll be coming out with regular data releases that are going to look at different facets of the election and different ways in which Canadians are engaging with their leaders and with their parties.
That was Kevin Chan with Facebook discussing the online conversations throughout the Maclean's leaders debate. Coming up after the break, the Maclean's panel weighs in on the debate and what the leaders have to do in the weeks ahead.
Welcome back to Maclean's on the Hill. It is now time for the Maclean's panel. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio, and I'm joined by Maclean's Ottawa Bureau Chief, John Geddes. And new to the Maclean's panel, we have Justin Ling from Vice News.
Hey, hey, hey.
thanks for coming on. All right, so, we've looked over the debate. We've really analyzed it. I think one thing we really need to look forward to now is to look forward and see where the leaders go from here and what needs to happen. John, we'll start with you. What do you think about their performance and what needs to be improved upon as we go forward in this campaign?
Yeah, I think most people were kind of agreed that last night there wasn't a big loser or a big winner. So, typically coming out of a debate, you're looking at who needs to either build momentum that they had picked up on the night of the debate, or someone who has to repair damage. I'm not sure it's obvious anyone has to do that. So you sort of look more to the nuances. And on the nuances, I think what the PM is going to want to do, Stephen Harper is going to want to do, is pull some clips from that thing. We'll start seeing them, I think, in Tory material where he looked. What do you think? I think Harper's best moments actually are kind of weird ones. They're when he looks exasperated, just slightly exasperated. Like, I can see that this is all nonsense that my opponents are talking about. Yeah. I'm a bit exasperated. I'm keeping my patience because I'm a grown up, but I'm a bit exasperated. I think he wants to kind of keep that thing rolling, that he was the guy who kind of can see reality, and the other people are going to have to do something because they're looking for change. They have to shoot for something just a little loftier, that they have vision. They want to bring a new flavor to things.
His two best moments, hands down, was when he basically cut into Thomas Mulcair and Justin Trudeau's bickering about national unity and said, I don't want to talk about this. Yeah. Nobody wants to talk about this. Yeah. Tom Mulcair is a dumb position, but that doesn't matter because we just should not be bringing this
practical
up.
Exasperation.
Exactly.
Kind of,
right?
But part of the issue is that that's not a topic that's likely going to be coming up in the campaign that Canadians are really focused on. Maybe in Quebec,
maybe
but
in
not
Montreal,
so much here.
Maybe in a few
Well,
it,
it's going to come up as much as Justin Trudeau tries to bring it up. And that's kind of the question about it, right? So in doing this, Stephen Harper gets to say simultaneously, Thomas Mulcair is a dangerous position. If he gets elected, we're going to talk about this. Justin Trudeau can't shut up about this. He keeps on talking about it on the campaign trail. I'm the only guy here who just doesn't think we should be talking about this at all, because we've already been clear, the Supreme Court says it's not up to us.
So even if this isn't the specific subject they're talking about, the place Harper's trying to position himself as the guy who's going to bring the conversation back to things you might care about, who isn't a guy who's distracted by peripheral kinds of questions, or questions Canadians just don't really would rather not to hear about much. And that's kind of, in a way, it's kind of his brand, eh? I'm not an exciting guy, but I'm a practical guy. Even on foreign policy, when it came down to both Mulcair and Trudeau were trying to raise the debate, like, well, what are Canadian values? How do we protect them on the world stage? And Harper was more about kind of like, the prime minister has to make hard decisions. ISIS is one of those hard decisions. You look at what kind of alliance is being assembled internationally, and you try to make the right call. I'm not saying he won all those things hands down, but there's a consistency in tone and message there. I'm a practical person who makes decisions I have to make, not the ones I don't have to make, and I make them even if they're tough decisions.
I think he won that part of the debate. Yeah. I think it was pretty clear. He called the other party leaders' positions foolish. And in that moment, they looked foolish.
Yeah.
You had both leaders bickering over each other saying, no, this fight isn't what we need to do. They're genocidal maniacs, the Islamic State, but we need to do something different. We need to figure out how to work together in a collaborative manner because the UN is really important. And then Stephen Harper comes in and says, if not ISIS, then what? If not this fight, what fight do we get? You know? And I think, you know, my mind, whenever this discussion comes up, goes straight to Rwanda. And the moral failure we felt as a society, letting that genocide go forward, and then you have the prime minister saying, we're in that position again, and you don't want us to do anything.
Do something, go ahead, Corey.
Well, I was just going to say, so we know that the Conservatives are going to point to clips and moments in this debate moving forward that they can really try and capitalize on to try and sway voters over to their side. What about the opposition leaders? What about Thomas Mulcair, Justin Trudeau, and Elizabeth May? Can they really grasp
anything?
They all
have good moments. Let's leave May aside for a sec, because she's sort of a special case here, but Mulcair and Trudeau both had their good moments, too. I thought one of Justin's came very, very early in his very first answer, when he tried to frame the economic debate as Stephen Harper over in 24 Sussex may not feel the anxiety in the economy, but I know you feel the anxiety in the economy. I think that's, in terms of framing the jobs and growth and prosperity and are we in a recession, does the deficit matter, all those technical things, if Trudeau can bring them back to, hey, I realize that you're anxious about your job, that you're worried about whether your kid's going to get a first job out of school. I realize that stuff. And Stephen Harper just keeps saying, Canada's doing well. The OECD and the IMF claim that we have good growth. Trudeau's trying to make it more about how do you feel about the economy, and Harper's trying to say, what are reputable international bodies telling us about the economy? I think that goes to Trudeau, that debate.
What about the Mulcair moment when he was able to sort of get Conservative leader Stephen Harper to admit that there was a recession, or not deny it, at least.
And so that's what Thomas Mulcair did pretty well, is actually going at the Prime Minister saying your economic record is spotty. But where Tom Mulcair utterly fell down on this part, and it looked like he didn't have anything to say. Really, he showed up there and you know, did his $15 minimum wage, $15 daycare, kind of like Herman Cain's 333, whatever that was from a couple years ago that was so entertaining. Thomas Mulcair just stuck to those 2 points, and that's really his economic platform right now, is $15 a day daycare and a $50 minimum wage for the small number of people, and it's not great. And Justin Trudeau caught him deep on that one, and I think going forward, he needs something new. We're talking about what came out of last night's debate and what's it's going to mean for them in the coming weeks. Thomas Mulcair needs an economic plan, and last night he didn't look like he had one.
I get what you're saying on that, Justin, and I agree that it sounded very underwhelming what he had, but I think if you consider it in terms of NDP strategy, what they want to avoid is a situation where Harper in particular, and Trudeau to a degree as well, can point to the NDP economic platform and say, look at this, big government, crazy NDP scheming about how they're going to change everything. These guys are a risky bet who are going to do nutty things. I think the NDP wants their economic policy to seem minimalist because they feel that their brand vulnerability is people claiming that they're interventionist lunatics who would spend a lot of money trying to do a lot of crap.
Yeah, well, the one other economic plank in the NDP that I'm forgetting about, of course, is cutting the small business tax, which I think goes against
the brand expectation.
Exactly, and it's kind of smart. But actually, the one thing I thought he was he could have brought up in that economic part, and I think he should talk about a lot more, is energy. Because actually, the energy portion of last night's debate, Thomas Mulcair was very strong. He was the one saying Stephen Harper is not actually getting these energy deals done, despite his big talk about wanting to turn the oil sands around again and get jobs moving again. I actually want to keep jobs here. I want to refine some of the product here. I want to get a pipeline done, and I want to get it done right. And Stephen Harper can't do that. So I think if he can bill himself as the jobs creator in the energy sector, I think people might buy it, because it worked for Rachel Notley.
In the initial moments after the debate, we couldn't really choose a leader. I mean, everybody had these really good moments. They got hit as well. But is there a possibility that in the days and weeks ahead, we can look back at this debate and say, you know what, that's where I saw a little bit of a change? Because right off the bat after the 2011 debate, no one was saying Jack Layton was a clear winner. But when we saw the big shift in his campaign, people looked back at that hit on Michael Ignatieff and said, look, that's where part of the change that happened in that campaign was that strong performance then.
interesting point. This debate came much earlier in the campaign, which gives people a lot more time to forget about it. So there's that problem in marking it as a turning point or a watershed. I think this debate reminded me more, going to show my age here, of some old debates where you had multiple performers who did okay. 1993, that's what happened. You had a stage full of people. It was a vigorous debate, exciting debate, interesting debate, but it was almost too even, you know? It's kind of what we're talking about here. Oh, there was a good moment for May there. There's a good moment for McCarroll there. You can kind of find moments, and so nobody ever quite cuts themselves out from the pack on it. I would say this. Justin Trudeau has had a tough time in the polls in the last few months. He didn't lose last night's debate, but if there's one person who really would have liked to have won last night's debate, I think it was Trudeau, and I don't think he won it, that's for sure.
Oh, well, I would say he wasn't trying to. I firmly believe that the only person on stage who was trying to win was Thomas Mulcair. If you're Stephen Harper, there's no point in trying to win, because if you start doing well in that debate, then you start opening yourself up to attack. You deliver your lines, you defend your record, and you let them bicker amongst themselves. Elizabeth May was never going to win. She made some very salient points.
Well,
she did very, very well. I thought she sounded very well. She knew her numbers. She rehearsed them, but she rehearsed kind of like a SEAL team. She's going to go in there, make her point, get a little feisty if she has to, and then she's going to get lost in the shuffle as the other leaders debate amongst themselves. So she did her job. Justin Trudeau had to go out there and he had to look better than what was expected of him, which was a very, very low bar. He had to show up. He had to know his numbers. He had to cut Stephen Harper. He had to cut Thomas Mulcair. And he did that. At other points, he failed to do that. But over the entire course of the debate, he generally did that. So I think he can call it a win. Thomas Mulcair had to go in there and knock everybody out, and he didn't.
No, I kind of agree with that, Justin. Tom Mulcair went in as the front runner. The typical front runner situation is you make sure you don't get knocked down to second or third, and I don't think that happened to Mulcair last night. Justin Trudeau went in as the guy who's been trailing in the polls and declining in most polls in recent months. He needs to reverse the way the lines are going, right? Mulcair just needs to make sure they sort of can stay on a track. So to me, the necessity for the debate or the imperative for the debate to actually do something was greatest for Trudeau, and it's hard for me to imagine it might have done something for him up until that last kind of awkward performance he gave on the closing statements, which I thought deflated any kind of energy he had picked up during the night. He did well in other parts of the night, and so I would have to think Mulcair is hoping to come out of that thing not changing the nature of the race. Trudeau really wanted to change
it. Well, I think Mulcair had to reinforce the idea that he is going to be the guy to take down Stephen Harper, because there's a lot of left-wing, center-left voters, even some center voters who say, we need change, don't care who it is, as long as they're capable, I'll stick with Mulcair. He had to go there and he had to reaffirm the idea that he was capable and that he knew what he was doing, and that he didn't have to be likable, but he had to be good at what he was doing. And then Thomas Mulcair walked in and had this painted-on grin that looked forced, and kind of meandered through some answers and came under attack and wasn't quite ready to defend himself in some of those circumstances. And I think some of those voters who had in their mind this really pristine idea of Thomas Mulcair, the fighter, the gravelly guy who can get stuff done, looks at that debate and goes like, oh, like is that the guy I'm going to vote for? Is that Thomas Mulcair? I don't think, I think there's other parts where they probably looked at him and said, oh, that's the guy. That's the guy I was expecting. That's the guy the media told me I was going to vote for when they were writing about him in question period. But I think a lot of voters walked out at the end of that debate going, it's not quite what I was expecting. I was expecting something a little more.
Expectations are a lot of the game. Yeah.
And Mulcair started doing just what you said a little bit later in the debate. So if viewers only came in for the first half, they probably didn't see Mulcair at his best in that debate.
And, of course, we have to watch what shows up in the ads, both positive and negative, you know, parties using their own guy, parties going after the other guy, and what shows up in clips going forward. Because one thing that will happen, it's a long campaign, and there'll be lots of opportunities when things happen for people to go back, oh yeah, this issue came up today, let's use the clip again of what the leader said on that during the debate, and that could end up on the margins mattering.
I mean, for what it's worth, Mulcair at his strongest in that debate was better than Trudeau at his strongest in that debate.
That's interesting, yeah.
All right, thanks very much, guys.
Okay,
really appreciate it.
Good to be here.
Justin Ling from Vice News. John Geddes, McLean's Ottawa Bureau Chief, and I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio.
Well, that's it for this week's episode. Make sure to check out our other McLean's podcasts. We have Bibliopod, our podcast about books, and we have our pop culture podcast called The Thrill. For more of your politics and power, join us next week on The Hill.